It's football and other F words, and boy, are my arms tired. My name is Zach Lyons. You can follow me on X at F Words Pod. We got Mike Herndon and Stoney Keeley. Follow Mike at Mike Herndon NFL. Follow Stoney at Stoney Keeley. PaulKarski.com. StackingTheInbox.com, SoBrosNetwork.com, 440 Sports, blah, 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 blah. Guess what? We've talked a lot about the fucking draft, and guess what? We're going to talk about more about the fucking draft again. And the reason I'm using so many F-bombs to start off the show is because as I adjust my camera, because I forgot that I needed to, you know, put this out, you know, get this all set up for our show. There was a guy that commented on Monday's YouTube for a football show that I stumbled across on the other day. And he said, too much spam, 5 minutes of spamming, and then you drop an F-bomb, I'm out. Well, it sounds like you were never fucking in to begin with, because right? obviously you must be new here, right? It's one of those situations where it's that. And I guess he was talking about the spamming because we were actually, you know, talking about our sponsors, which is what we are paid to do. And so that's what I'm going to do right now. Bluegrass Beverages in Hendersonville, Tennessee. They're sponsoring our draft party. I think there's one ticket left for the bourbon tasting slash Lachlan 3-course meal. There's one ticket left for that. And I think there's only one or two tickets left for Thursdays, where it's Edley's Barbecue and all you can eat, all you can drink. Well, I don't know if it's really all you can eat, because I don't think like Edley's is like ship cooking there. So there's going to be a lot of food and all that food is all the food that you can eat that we are providing. So I guess it is kind of all you can eat when you think about that way.
Well, they just keep some cows out back just in case.
I don't know. No cows grazing in the gravel parking lot.
Just keep the pigs out back just in case.
Yeah. But so PaulKarski.com has Mike's mock draft out today. It has my mock draft out tomorrow. I spend a little bit talking about the best player available and why that strategy would have really worked if John Robinson had taken advantage of it during the time that he could have, with two quarterbacks that were technically at the time of all the drafts franchise quarterbacks, I would say starting quarterbacks that your franchise can utilize and capitalize. But we're going to be talking about all that kind of stuff over at PaulKarski.com. Over at StackingTheInbox.com, we have a full round mock draft by me, a unhinged mock draft coming from Stoney tomorrow. And just now just got released is Trajan Watkins, full Titans mock draft. So lots of mock drafts. Big board will be released at some point tomorrow from StackingTheInbox.com. It's not interactive. I don't want you screwing around with it while me and Stoney are trying to do our job on Saturday, but it will be at least there for you to look at. Okay. That's a lot to get through. That's why I'm exhausted. I'm just tired.
Like content. Braden, lots of content.
Braden goes, we weren't going to record anything for tomorrow. We're just going to do the draft show. And then he goes, well, you know, should we record something? And this is how Braden talks in his text. This is how I picture it. Oh, well, you know, shouldn't we do something, you know, advertising this and then making our final picks? And like, Braden, I told you on Monday, I'm not interested in making my final picks, but I'll do like a 10-minute show. I'm not a total, you know, asshole. So I was like, I'll do a 10-minute show. He's like, how about 10:30? I said, how about 8? And he goes, well, Stoney could do 10:30. I was like, well, fine. It's 10:30, I guess, because you two fucking divas. And we're doing like a 10-minute, 20-minute show tomorrow, right before the draft. So you guys come check that out. It won't be live. We're pre-recording and releasing at 1 p.m. because I need a break. I need like some time. I don't know how you guys are. And we're going to get into some of these rants of these worst, you know, drafts talk that just drives you nuts. But I'm just fucking exhausted. And I know Stoney is, even though that he willingly put himself through 25 more draft prospects and tape evaluations. Go ahead.
Hold on. I forgot that you technically did two of the evaluations to get to our 275. So I stayed up last night and worked in Josh Newton and Evan Anderson to get to an actual honest 300 prospects.
300 prospects for no reason. Because I mean, 300 players cannot be drafted in the NFL. Yeah. So for no reason. It's and yes, he has already started prepping for 2025. But I know Stoney's exhausted, but Mike, you have a child on top of all of everything that you do and a demanding full-time job of running a business. Where are you at on the exhaustion level?
10. I've stayed on 10 for a long time now, I feel like. It's a lot, especially since my last two pieces for PaulKarski.com both were like, I was on like page like 11 or 12 of the Word document last night. So, I mean, it's like writing full on essays at this point, not high school, like master's thesis level papers right now once a week, in addition to raising a very busy soon to be 4-year old and a business. So it's a lot.
Being played, some sports leagues involved now. Instagram. So
we've got karate. We've got a busy social schedule. He's got a birthday party this weekend. I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot going on.
Listen, it's the birthday party on Sunday because it can't come during day 3 of the draft. You have told your family, day 3 of the draft. I am not going to a child's birthday party.
Oh, it's 100% happening on Saturday. Yeah. I'll be checking the day 3 picks on my phone for a little bit there.
Yeah. Would have stayed in Tennessee, there would have been no birthday party scheduled during draft weekend. You do understand that, right? This is all your fault.
No,
hoisted by your own petard.
Day 3 of the draft, I know it's for the sickos and everything, but I just by that point I'm going to be exhausted. I'm exhausted of talking about it now. I'm going to be like, I don't give a shit. Take whoever you want. Just, whatever. Let me know when it's done. I'll check it on my phone, but I'm not sitting there and listening to Mel Kiper wax poetic about Javon Solomon.
You can listen to us. Me and Stoney will be waxing poetically about all those players. So I mean, we're on for the full amount.
Well, bless you, salad, boys. A
breakfast burrito. I don't know, but we are those sickos.
I will keel over dead by that point if I had to keep talking about this fucking draft class.
I might die all on right. the air.
We may both get served like divorce papers or something while on the air.
Well, my wife's going to be out of town, so I'm good. I'm in the clear. I'm in the clear on Saturday. Yeah, and I'm bringing the football back as well. Going to fill that thing up with some gin.
I like it.
Just take a sip here and there. We'll get through the day.
There's a good chance that after the draft, I know we're not talking about the draft, but who cares? I mean, at this point, haven't you guys already heard probably everything we're going to say anyway? But after the draft, I may have to go downtown. Saturday. It is an exhausting Saturday and likely no rest on Sunday, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. And we got garden work scheduled for next week. So
grind
for the wicked, because I am wicked. All right. Let's talk about some draft takes. Well, let's first, I guess, talk about some of the stuff that came from Rand Carthon and Brian Callahan's press conference that was obviously orchestrated by the puppet master, Chad Brinker, who owns the Titans. I don't know if you guys know that or not, but now he has gone from president of football operations. He owns the Tennessee Titans because he did a 5-minute spiel at the beginning of the press conference. So, Stoney, I'm going to start with you. What was a takeaway from the press conference yesterday that you feel like maybe fans are overlooking?
Well, first of all, I think there is definitely trouble in paradise and somebody needs to get Chad Brinker in check. I don't know. Maybe it's too early, but I'm not going to be surprised if the fire Chad Brinker talk starts heating up after yesterday's press conference. I think there was something particularly interesting in the press conference. I didn't write down the exact quote, of course, as I'm off to do, but something along the lines of special prospects that they would not move down from 7 for. Like if there was a guy there that they had pretty highly on their board that they would just stick and pick, they wouldn't even consider trading down. And I kind of started, I sent you a text, Zach. I was panicked. I'm sleep deprived right now. Justin Graver put up an excellent thread about why Roma Dunze makes sense for the Titans. And I have all these conflicting thoughts just swimming through my head, but I'm looking at these prospects. And we've talked about Joe Alt being the safe, steady, reliable offensive lineman. We've talked about Marvin Harrison Jr. and Roma Dunze both being pretty safe prospects. But when you talk about special traits that would command sticking and picking at seven, even if there was an offer on the table, I'm looking at prospects that have that kind of ceiling, and I'm looking at Malik Nabers' speed, and I'm thinking, oh man, he kind of fits the bill as one of those guys that if he were to hit his ceiling would probably be special enough to fend off all trade back offers and just stick and pick. So that's why I was kind of worried yesterday. I'm like, oh man, they've got some guys that they deem truly special, and the generational term that we throw around all the time. And I don't know. I felt like all signs were starting to point to Malik Nabers. And then this morning, Paul Kaharsky's on Robbie and Rex Road talking about how there might be some credence to these Malik Nabers character issues. And I believe the phrase he used was, some teams are going to be fine with it. You can live with it. It's not that big of a deal. Some teams won't care at all, but there is definitely something there. So now my head's all mixed up again. I don't know. I just want to sleep and get to tomorrow night.
Mike, you're of the assumption, because you kind of tweeted something about this last night, and I was glad that this was brought up first, because I think you guys are both overreacting. And I think this is only Marvin Harrison Jr. I think that's the only guy that he's referencing, because the question is prospects, right? Okay, so we got that there. And I think a lot of people are way too focused on the S in prospects, because he says yes, but it's like yes with... Yeah, I can't remember exactly what he said, but it's like, yes.
But he said the word couple.
Is yes.
He said the word
no,
couple.
He just said,
there are a couple guys that we would not move away from. He said couple. He said
where?
Couple.
Because that's not in the clip that I saw TD posted. He just said yes, but it's a very complicated answer or something to that effect. It was like, yes, but it wasn't that. It was like, because
I'm like, about 1,000% sure certain that he said yes, there's a couple guys that we would not move off of.
Okay, we'll have to fact check that, because I don't think that's what was in TD's video. I think that's what someone said, but maybe that was in a different part of a different question. But the question that TD asked, which is, are there prospects that you'd not want to move off of? And he goes, yes, but it was like, yes, there's blah, 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 blah. It was a complicated question. So it's like, yes, but there's more to the story. There's a bunch of caveats. There's a bunch of stuff. So I don't think that I think the only prospect is Marvin Harrison Jr. that they for sure wouldn't trade. Now, will they stick and pick if the trade offers are not good enough? Yes, they're not just going to take any trade. And I think that's the way to view it, is not that, oh, well, any trade that comes through, they're not going to move off this player. I don't think there's any trade like that. That's going to be like, oh, this trade is just, this great is great. Yeah, he said the short answer is yes. He did say, he said a couple, but he said the short answer is yes. So that's what I am focused on, was the short answer is yes. And I think that people are like, well, that means Joe Alt for sure. They won't trade with Joe Alt there. They won't trade with Malik Nabers there. I really just think it's like, if Caleb Williams were to fall and Marvin Harrison Jr. were to fall, then short answer is, long answer is, we'll take a trade, you know, or those guys, we won't take a trade.
And I think, look, I mean, parsing whether he meant two or one or whatever, there's no telling. And it's also lying season, so we got to keep all that in mind too. But I think,
on if they had, listen, just real quick, this is from PK.
Yeah,
he texted in on if they have certain prospects that they would take no matter the trade offer for their pick. This is the question. The answer was Rand Carthon. Short answer: yes.
But then he went on to say something else, and I don't know. I'd have to go back and listen. Whatever. We'll stop parsing out whatever he said, because we don't. None of us have it in front of us right now. So, I'll say this: I think there are probably guys, maybe multiple guys, maybe one guy. I don't know, that they would not move off of if that guy's available. So maybe Marvin Harrison Jr., maybe Malik Nabers, and maybe even Joe Alt. I don't know. I tend to think if it was me running the Titans draft, I would move off of Ault if I had the right offer and he was on the board and I could move back a couple spots and take JC Latham or Olufoshanu, which Albert Breer is reporting that it sounds like it is Ault and Latham that are at the top of the Titans boards. And he thinks that it's going to be possibly Ault and Latham 5 and 7 to the Chargers and Titans in some order, whether, and it'll just depend on which one goes first. But, I think if one of those special receivers are there.
But we also know that none of these guys ever say, but if there was a trade offer on the table, they're moving off of them, right? Like, hardly ever do you read that part because they don't know.
And
these guys aren't, this is the part of the thing that drives me crazy is that we've seen in these articles lately that it's not really the team telling people this. It's what other teams think the Titans are going to do.
Right. Well, yeah, nobody's going to call up Albert Breer and say, yeah, we're taking Joe Ault at 7 for sure.
But I think we need to explain that because I don't think other people understand that. Like other people continue to think that Ryan Cowden was the mastermind behind last year's draft, like Chad Brinker owns the Tennessee Titans this year, that when he was just a glorified Vanna White for the draft board. We have to be a little bit more vocal and clear about how the process is actually working with these national media members to make sure that these fans that listen to us and respect us understand where this information has come from. This information is typically around this time coming from what other teams think that team is going to do.
And I will say that, you know, we all think that like the teams are keeping secrets from each other, right? Well, I do think that other teams know what other teams are going to do sometimes to a larger degree than maybe what you would think. Because I heard a story, I think it was on the Athletic Football Podcast maybe a couple weeks ago, when they talked about there was a scout who knew he was done for at his organization after the draft. Like he was going to be fired. He already knew it. He was in the draft room. They were, you know, getting ready to pick, and they were talking about who was going to be the pick, and I guess they'd come to a decision. He leaves the draft room and go to the bathroom, quote unquote, and texts his buddy at another team and says, hey, they're going to pick this guy. The other team jumps in front of him to take him because he knew that they wanted him. So, like, there are people that talk that are not – like, Rand Carthon's not going to tell anybody, you know, who they're going to take. But there are other people in that room that might not have the exact – interests of the Tennessee Titans at heart. You would hope they would, but you know, if there's a scout that knows he's at the end of the rope and he's trying to like latch onto another job and he thinks, hey, I can supply a little information, maybe I can get a job out of this deal. You know, I think teams do talk to each other, and it may not be the principal decision makers, but some of the underlings, I think, are little gossip girls running around spreading secrets. So I do think that's how some of this information does get out that ends up being accurate, even though not everything, obviously, that's being reported right now will be the God's honest truth.
Feels like it's very rarely accurate, right? Like, don't we all just buy into all this stuff and then unless it's like the obvious, like Bryce Young at 1, Caleb Williams at 1. It feels like a lot of this stuff is just very – like I looked at the 33rd team's final mock draft, which is former GMs, right? Former GMs and decision makers. They got like 5 players right. They had like Hendon Hooker in the first round, Jalin Hyatt in the first round. It just feels like, you know – I mean, that's the reason why they're former, obviously. If they're
and they may not have the sources that like, you know, Breer and like –
Well, I mean, they would be connected, right? I mean, sources would be better than – Breers? I would think so. I mean, they used to work there.
Well, maybe, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, some of those GMs haven't worked in the league for several years too. Yeah. So I don't know. But either way, definitely be careful with reports out there right now. And yeah, we're close enough that like, let's just wait and see what happens anyways. Yeah. Right. But
it's
I think,
like the report today from Diana Russini, like, oh my gosh, I'm so shocked that the Tennessee Titans fell in love with Marvin Harrison Jr. at the combine. Said a team loves the wide receiver one of this draft. Color me shocked. I can't believe it. And then like, it was nothing. I mean, all those reports were nothing.
Now I will say this, because there are reports out there that a bunch of teams like Malik Nabers more than they like Marvin Harrison Jr. And
we've known for months,
but we don't know where the Titans might fall on that, whether they might be one of those teams that likes Nabers better. It is interesting to know that they do like Harrison quite a bit, which I would have thought they liked Harrison. I would have thought they liked Nabers too. So like, it's not groundbreaking, but it is interesting to hear them connected to him in that way. I've been kind of operating under the assumption that maybe they did. Maybe they were one of the Nabers wide receiver ones teams, and maybe they still are. I don't know, but this at least.
I think the wide receiver coach maybe, because that in the Bob McGinn go long touchdown Substack article about wide receivers, first wide receiver coach talking about Malik Nabers sure did bring up some interesting names that are tied to Tyke Tolbert. So it's just sounded a lot like him. And he was an AFC wide receiver coach. So I just want to throw that out there.
Interesting.
I'll tell you guys what, they've been awfully quiet about a certain edge rusher out of Alabama. So I'm just saying, if you were going to put up a smoke screen and throw people off the scent.
There's also
Latham, Terrian Arnold, and Kool-Aid McKinstry to Intel. Get everything that they can on Dallas Turner.
360 view on Dallas Turner. But I will say this to that point. What's one of the things that they've been most criticized about from last year's draft? It's that information got out about C.J. Stroud, right?
Yeah.
And so I do kind of wonder, like, maybe has that spooked them to the point where, like, they're being intentionally over-the-top clandestine about who they're actually interested in. And, like, Rome Odunze is notably missing from the wide receiver connections at this point in the media with them. Olufoshanu is notably missing from the tackle connections for this team, despite making a ton of sense for them.
What I tell you yesterday, Sony?
I think there could be some 40 chess. There could be some 40 chess happening with Rand Carthon here. And I also will say this. The Titans media, particularly Ramon Foster and Mike Keith, who are both part of Titans Radio, state media, right? They have been particularly like, thou doth protest too much about that. Well, they might not take tackle. They might not take tackle. Like, they've been pushing. Like,
but do you think? But do you think that
something else?
But that started at the Senior Bowl stuff. I mean, that's been going on for
a while.
That's
been going on forever. Yeah.
So do you think that is just their big opinion is more the fact they don't have to do anything, which is something that we have said.
I agree. They don't have to do anything.
What that all stems from. So
I like a new conspiracy theory,
but we'll see.
Every video Mike Keith has put out on Twitter over the last month has been talking about anything but a tackle.
It is interesting that he is getting to this selfie TikTok video trend at this time of year. I will say that is very interesting.
I like it.
And you know, I sent this to Sony yesterday, just saying one thing: Skoronski never visited. Odunze and Olu never visited. So I sent that to Stoney yesterday. So I think it's something to keep an eye on. Mike, what else really stood out to you from this press conference?
Not much. I don't know. I didn't think anything was that interesting besides the we might not move off of that pick for certain guys. I thought the next most interesting thing might have been Callahan talking about finding tackles later in the draft, but I think he's full of shit. I don't think you're going to find starters later in this draft. Like, maybe down the road starters, but not day one starters.
You're out on Patrick Paul. You just drafted him last week like 30 times.
Well, no, I wrote in my mock draft article for Paul Kaharski, not to spoil, you know, 1/32nd of my mock draft, but I put Patrick Paul into that first round. I have him going in the first round. I had 10 offensive linemen going in the first round. And I think the depth is just going to get ate up so fast, because part of the thing that I learned going through that process was you go through and you start looking at all the rosters, looking at all these teams' needs. Everyone from like the Titans back desperately need tackles, like desperately need tackles. You talk like the Cowboys, the Packers, you know, the Rams, like all these teams in the middle of the first round are like, they're going to have to fight over each other to get on top, to get these tackles like Fatanu and Guyton and Mims. Like, there's no chance Guyton's getting out of the first round. And I think Guyton's a pretty flawed prospect.
How much you want to bet?
Oh, and I'll bet half of the fantasy football winnings that you owe me.
I'm in. $25. I'm in.
All right. $25.
$25. Because I think Guyton's definitely getting out of the second.
I don't round, think
even
so.
Though I didn't put that in my mock draft.
None of those tackles are getting out of the first round.
I think they are because everybody has bigger needs. I just come to the fact that there's so many teams that do need defense and that have nothing on defense. And I think that there are teams that are both tackle needy and other things needy. I do have Amarius Mims going to the Ravens just to spite you because I hate you. all right, Stoney, we're going to start off with our main topics here. And I need to know from you, what is an event, whether it's picking a player or trading back or something, that it could be day one, day two, day three. If you want to pop three bottles of champagne, go ahead. But what is going to have you pop a bottle of champagne? What can the Titans do that will have you pop a bottle of champagne in this draft?
I mean, listen, I gotta listen to my heart here. And Roma Dunze is my favorite player in this draft. He's number one on my big board. If you picked up the Stacking the Inbox NFL draft guide that came out Friday, he's number one on my big board. I think he's the best receiver in this class. Doesn't solve the biggest need for this team, but I do still believe in the tackle depth in this class. I do still believe, you know, Andres Pete's just sitting at home waiting for Rand Carthon to call. I think they can patch some things together to make it work. And if they get Roma Dunze tomorrow night one, I'm going to be popping champagne. Also, if they do actually take Dallas Turner at seven, but that'll be for a different reason. That'll just be so I can say I was right and just, you know, become the Joker kind of deal. But if they land Roma Dunze on day one, I'm going to be doing cartwheels down Broadway. Might not have clothes on. Day two, I'm going trade back. If they can trade out of 38, get another third round pick, I'll be celebrating that pretty heavily. And then day three, I would say picking up Edifuan Ulofosio. I think he's got the traits to be a linebacker. I think he's got the traits to be an impact linebacker sooner than people are giving him credit for. I've already wrapped up my eval on him, but I was watching a little extra just because he's one of my favorite players in this draft. And every time I watch one of his games, I find something new that I really like about him. And I think he could be the answer for the Titans linebacker problem. So that's what I'm going with if I'm popping champagne this weekend.
I like it. What are some of your champagne poppers that can happen this weekend, Mike?
So mine will be, and I'll go either or. I would say either Neighbors or Marvin Harrison Jr. being the pick at seven. I get the tackle thing. They need a tackle. But here's what I keep coming back to. If one of those two guys, and I love Rome too, so don't get me wrong, Stoney. I love your boy Rome. I just think that those guys are just a like notch above for me. But to me, I keep coming back to this. Getting like one of the top five tackles. So let's say Laremy Tunsil, for example. If what's a comparable wide receiver like Justin Jefferson from the Vikings? Let's say the Vikings called up Houston and said, "We'll give you Justin Jefferson for Laremy Tunsil." How quick does Houston say yes? I'd say pretty quickly, right? So I think to me, you don't win games because of your left tackle. You can lose games because of your left tackle. The Titans have lost a bunch over the last 2 years, and I get the urgency to fix that situation. However, you can win games because of your wide receiver. We saw what AJ Brown meant to an otherwise average offense over his time in Tennessee. I think Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Neighbors, are those kind of transformational wide receivers that will make this team significantly more dangerous. And I think if you can get to average at left tackle, and whether that's an Andrews Pete, you know, texting him, "Hey, you up after you draft Malik Neighbors," or whatever, or whether that's grabbing like Blake Fisher at pick 38 or something like that. I think there's ways to get to average at left tackle, which to me is where you need to be. You can't be average at wide receiver in the current NFL. Like that's not an option unless you have Patrick Mahomes, basically, right? He's the one exception to that rule because everyone else needs an elite receiver to me. And so if you can give Will Levis an elite wide receiver who is not 29 or 31 years old to kind of build around and become his like go-to guy for the long haul, I think you've got to do it and you figure out another option. You figure out another path to tackle. So to me, that's what I keep coming back to is just,
I mean, let me say something. They're in continued talk with Andres Pete. I cannot believe that I spoke it into existence that after our stupid mock draft episode last week is that all I heard was like the next day I'm talking, actually that Wednesday after our show, Stillman said something about Andres Pete, and I was like, I cannot believe I fucking talked it into existence. And
you know what it was,
TD,
Zach?
Says something that they're talking about Andres Pete, and I guess I have a final destination to me, is that I have foreseen that, you know, Andres Pete is the final destination.
You know what I think it means, Zach? It's that the final boss of the Titans, Chad Brinker, must be listening to Football and Other F-Words.
There you go. Final boss. I like it. I like it. Champagne popping for me is a trade. I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is like two bottles of champagne. Like, bring out the Magnum bottle of champagne. Bring that sucker out when we're popping it.
I thought you were going
somewhere
else.
That's Marvin Harrison Jr. Yeah. No.
Whoa. This is not After Dark episode here, Zach.
But that is where I'm at on Marvin Harrison Jr. But I think the true pop and bottle moment for me, and it's kind of like for Stoney and the Dallas Turner thing, is if the Tennessee Titans somehow trade back and still get Olufoshane. And or even Roma Dunze. I'll throw in Roma Dunze, Malik Nabers, Joe Alt as well, because there are scenarios, they may not be likely, where, you know, if Alt and Nabers are both there at 7 and you trade back to 9 or 10, you may still get one of all their neighbors. So it is it's a small chance of happening, but the NFL draft is where small chances of happening turn into big. It is a probability orgy. Like, there is no telling what is going to happen in the NFL draft. I mean, no one ever thought Jordan Brooks was going to go in the first round, or a team was stupid enough to trade up for Marcus Davenport, and then suddenly a 0.5% chance thing of happening turns into a 100% chance thing.
Or Terrell Edmonds. Terrell Edmonds was like a fourth round prospect when the Steelers took him in the first round, 3 or 4 years ago.
But all this to say is that I think if you got a trade back and you still got a premier wide receiver and a premier left tackle in a trade back, that is reason to celebrate. That means that you have a GM that is able to pull off trades. Listen, he already hoodwinked Howie Roseman, right? He got all these picks for Kevin Byard, who was nothing for, and then ended up getting cut by the Eagles. So here would be another resume booster for the Tennessee Titans general manager, or a resume booster for final boss Chad Brinker, however you view what is going on in Tennessee Titans. But at the end of the day, if you trade back and you still got Olu, hell, I'll throw in Brock Bowers or Dallas Turner. If you trade back and still get a blue chip or borderline blue chip player, I'm in. I'm all in. I'm popping bottles of champagne, and then I'm doing a round of I told you so to all the idiots on the internet that pigeonholed themselves into one pick at 7. So that's kind of where I'm at on popping bottles of champagne. I would pop a bottle of champagne for Jordan McGee and Malik Washington on day 3. I don't think Ricky Pearsall really gets the champagne popping bottle treatment. I don't know about you guys, but
we're getting leg tattoos for that.
Leg tattoos.
Yeah. I'd pop one for Darius Robinson. Darius Robinson at 38. I don't think he'll get there, but if he did, I'd pop a bottle for that. Javon Baker, my boy, Malik Washington. I'd pop bottles for those guys on day 3.
Yeah, there you go. I like it. I think that was a good little segment, a little something different, some champagne balls. But here's the thing: the Tennessee Titans are really at a turning point for this franchise. This is a pivotal draft. And it sounds crazy to say that a team that was just in the AFC championship and then, you know, in the playoffs is now at a pivotal moment again after having a pivotal moment where they had to hire a head coach and a GM and all this other stuff. But yet again, they're in another pivotal moment. So What do the Titans, like, what is a player or position or something? What has to happen this weekend, no matter what? Because we've talked about, well, the Titans don't have to go Joe Alt. But do the Titans have to get a left tackle this draft? What is your no matter what, the Titans have to do this? Mike, we'll start with you.
They as much as we talked about, they don't have to do it in the first round. They do have to get a tackle. You can't go into this season with the guys that they have at tackle. You know, even if you add Anders Pete or Cam Fleming or whoever you want after the draft, you cannot go into the season with just what you've got. You got to get somebody. And this is still a good tackle class. And even if, you know, I think the depth is going to get eaten up in round one, the guy that you get at 38 is still going to be better than the guy that you would get at 38 in most draft classes for this position. So I think you've got to take advantage of the depth of tackle in this class at some point and come away with somebody, even if it's not in the first round necessarily.
What is your no matter what, Stoney?
Yeah, it would be offensive tackle. I don't even care if it's left or right. I mean, ideally, they could get both, even if they miss out on a guy in the first round. If they walk out of this weekend with, say, Christian Jones and Travis Glover added to what they have in the room currently, and maybe another free agent addition as well, I think you feel better about the offensive line moving forward, but it's not something that they can afford to neglect altogether, because it could help this offense exponentially just by solving one of the problems. Like I said, it doesn't have to be left tackle. If they could get a Christian Jones in the fourth round and he develops into your starting right tackle, well, that means you don't have to add tight end help on both sides of the offensive line on every single play, and it gives you a little more flexibility to do it. So because of the exponential impact it could have on this offense, I think it's the one position that you have to have some influx of talent, one side or the other. And then I would say honorable mention to linebacker. I'm still pounding the table for a linebacker in this draft.
Yeah, I agree with both of your alls no matter what. So I want to throw out a different no matter what. I was going to do linebacker, but I think that no matter what, the Tennessee Titans have to find a wide receiver. Now, I don't care if it's an X wide receiver, a Z wide receiver, slot wide receiver. They have to find a wide receiver that can come in and day one take Treylon Burks to the woodshed and be the wide receiver three this year. And they have to push down people on the depth chart, because after Calvin Ridley and after DeAndre Hopkins, it's tough. It's rough. They have a really great duo, but you also have kind of guys on the older side, despite, you know, maybe having more tread on his tire in Calvin Ridley, but you can't rely that two guys are going to stay perfectly healthy in the NFL. So you have to have a guy that, even if it means that's Malik Washington, right? And okay, DeAndre Hopkins goes down, you're going to have to put Treylon Burks outside or NWI outside. At least you still have Malik Washington or a guy or someone like that and Calvin Ridley. And you have Tajay Spears, Chigga Conquo. But you have to find that third guy, because they love playing. Well, we should see the Tennessee Titans run more 11 personnel than we've ever seen before. So in my mind, you have to have a third wide receiver, and they do not have a dependable third wide receiver at all. And we all know that as long as NWI is on this team, is that someone is getting hurt and NWI is going to see meaningful snaps. So we have to try our best to at least mitigate what NWI's damage is going to be done to this wide receiver room. So that is where I'm at.
Zach, I'm curious how you feel about this, because this kind of goes back to our Drinking with the Scouts episode on stacking the inbox from Mobile. But if they don't address receiver in the first round, how do you feel about the crop of talent now on the eve of the draft in the second round? Would you feel like comfortable with one of those guys, or are you thinking like stockpile a few bodies on day three or as undrafted free agents to compete?
I think that at the end of the day, I just don't know how the NFL views guys like Javon Baker, Jermaine Burton, mm-hmm. We've already seen reports that Adonai Mitchell is off of teams' boards because he is a head case, and because he's from Texas, so that automatically means he's an insane person. He's probably he probably got Tavondre Sweat drunk, more than likely, allegedly.
He just has diabetes. Come on. He just has diabetes. He gets cranky when his blood sugar's low. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Well, he's trying to get his blood sugar up drinking margaritas. Listen, either way, I don't know how they feel about these wide receivers. So I feel good. I feel much better about Ricky Pearsall. I feel good about Ladd McConkey in the second round. They're going to have to scheme him, and I'm not big on having guys that you have to scheme. I like guys that can fit any scheme and can do any plays, and that's just kind of where I'm at. And maybe Ladd proves me wrong. Maybe he's one of those guys that comes in and, okay, well, I'm really good against press, so screw you all you guys. I don't know. But, you know, I'm all about mitigating risk. So I'm still not big on Keelan Coleman there. I know the consensus board is really high on him. Xavier Leggett, I'm open to, because I think there's a lot of upside and knowing more about his personal history. But I still don't really love the day two wide receivers. I agree with the Tennessee Titans, what they said yesterday, whether smoke or not from them. I do believe that after Odunze, I would say after Brian Thomas, it's a considerable drop off. Like really after Brian Thomas, it's a considerable drop off.
Well, what's interesting with Brian Thomas is now there's a bunch of smoke coming out that Xavier Worthy is wide receiver 4 for a lot of people, and he could be the 4th wide receiver off the board, pushing Thomas down a little bit. Either way, both those guys I think are going in round 1 no matter what. But to me, like, I think Pearsall, and that's who I gave the Titans in the second round and the mock that I put on PaulKarski.com today. Go check it out. But Pearsall, to me, makes a ton of sense because, again, we talked about Calvin Ridley being able to separate, making him a difference maker, because none of the Titans receivers last year could separate at all. Pearsall can separate. Like, he has proven that. The metrics bear that out. And he can play the slot. I think what Callahan said when asked about the slot position specifically, basically saying that they need someone to emerge there, and then rattling off Kyle Phillips, Mason Kinsey, and NWI as the potential options.
Kyle Phillips is working out with Will Levis because I guess Will Levis doesn't want to throw to good wide receivers.
Well, Brian Callahan basically just turned around and shot the whole Treylon Burks big slot theory down. So, I just think that in that position is a starting position for this Titans team now that Callahan's here, because they're going to run a lot of 11 personnel. They were top 3 in the league, I think, every year that he was in Cincinnati in 11 personnel usage. So to me, it is a need because Phillips is, and I've been as big a supporter as Phillips. I mean, we both have, going back to last year.
I've abandoned that ship. I've lit it on fire as I've dove into the ocean, and I'm just waiting for someone to come pick me up or a shark to just take me out of my misery.
And waiting for someone to emerge does not sound like, that's not like, hey, we're really happy with the options that we have on the roster right now. That is code for we need better. So I think Pearsall and guys of and McConkey too, like, because even if McConkey is like quote unquote just a slot for you, they need it, and that guy's gonna play a lot. So, I think both those guys make sense in that round 2 range,
At the combine, I just want real quick, Stoney, because at the combine, at Senior Bowl, when we were talking about it, the Titans had DeAndre Hopkins, and that was it.
And so Roman Wilson,
they have DeAndre Hopkins and Calvin. Yeah, and Roman Wilson. DeAndre Hopkins is now paired with Calvin Ridley, so that kind of makes your wide receivers at 38 a little bit more palatable, because you don't need an outside wide receiver per se. So that I just wanted to throw that in there, but Stoney, you go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think there's a guy on day 3 that has a really high ceiling that we haven't talked about enough, and that's Ryan Flournoy out of SEMO. Mm-hmm. I know we've said we're Flornatics since Mobile, Alabama, but not really getting into his game that much. There's some highlights of SEMO's game against Lindenwood that are up on YouTube that everybody can access and they can go search. And it's just so awesome to watch a player that he's going to get the ball and he's just going to bend you over the barrel and there's nothing you can do to stop. It's like every snap, I'm looking at the pre-snap alignment. I'm like, this is going to go to Flournoy, and he's just going to carry this up the field for 30 yards. He's got the traits. Wrote about him, his week in Mobile, in the draft guide for Stacking the Inbox, but also you ran his numbers, and he looks like a pretty good fit for what the Titans look for in a wide receiver. I don't know what his draft stock, where his draft stock is at right now, which round specifically he's going to go in, but if they're looking for a guy that has, in my opinion, starter upside on day three, I think he really fits the bill nicely for this team. And I would just raise his name to make our viewers, our listeners, kind of aware of him in case they call his name this weekend.
All right. I got a request, Mike. I've been asked to ask you this question, even though I kind of feel like you answered this question when you were talking about this earlier.
Yeah.
But this comes from Easton. I need Mike to address how he went from the Titans' O-line sucks, canary in the coal mine last summer, to now wanting a first-round receiver, despite thinking basically all the tackles are going to go early. And I thought you did when you were talking about, wide receivers. Would you rather have Justin Jefferson or Laramie Tunsil, the Texans? So just elaborate and educate, if you will.
I told everyone that I thought last year that the offensive line was going to suck, and then they did. And I still think, this is a problem for them, obviously, with the offensive line currently. I think, though, that you can't just say, well, that's our biggest problem. We have to take the best guy at that position when we go on the clock, because you've got to look at this thing from a five-year window standpoint, and like, who is going to be the most impactful guy for the next 5 years? Because look, you can get a tackle next year too. I don't think the Titans are winning a Super Bowl in 2024. And that, not to shit on our season preview episodes coming up here this summer, but I'm not going to have them entered as my pick to win Super Bowl, whatever, 60 or whatever we're on now.
Shocking.
I want them to do better at tackle for Will Levis's safety and all that moving forward. But Joe Alt is not the only man who can save them from certain doom at that position. And to me, if you've got three wide receivers who none of which are really coverable for a defense, yeah, you can tell Will Levis, hey, you got to get the ball out quick, but your guys are going to be open. So I think there's multiple ways to skin a cat. And to me, like, if you have an elite group of wide receivers and you have a special player, which I think both Harrison and Neighbors are special players, just better prospects than Joe Alt, I'm not passing up the better prospect at a position, a premium position, just to take this other guy because, hey, I've got like a blinking alarm going off for the 2024 season. Because listen to me, fuck the 2024 season. We are building something to go long, right? Like, we are building something for 2025, 2026, 2027 here. And if you give me the choice between an all-pro wide receiver or an all-pro left tackle, I'm taking the all-pro wide receiver all day, twice on Sunday. So that's where I'm at on it. And look, I want them to improve the tackle situation. I do, but not at the expense of like abandoning all reason and just blindly picking all tackles for the entire draft.
Let me ask you a question. And Stoney, I'll start with you on this off of what he just said. So do we think that because it was DeAndre Hopkins, Treylon Burks, NWI, Cal Phillips last year, and a bad offensive line, that with it being this year, it can be Andres Pete on the offense and maybe at left tackle, our boy Andres. We'll have to have him on the show if he ever gets signed. Andres Pete, Calvin Ridley, DeAndre Hopkins, and Roma Dunze at worst. We'll say at worst, even though that we're higher on Roma Dunze than Mike is, but I think we all agree that they're the top three, right? So don't we think that's still a better situation than everything that they had last year? I mean, for Will Levis still, I mean, I kind of feel that way. I see where Mike's going. And I've been a big proponent that if you have three good wide receivers, the defenses have to account for, and then you got Chig, and then you got a pass catching running back. I don't know. I kind of feel like that they can't just tee off. Like, that's what they've been able to do. That's been the real problem, is that defenses have been able to tee off on this team. It's not just that the offensive line sucks. It's that the offensive line sucks, and they only have to worry about DeAndre Hopkins, or they didn't have to worry about anybody 2 years ago. Like, that's been the situation in my mind. So I've always been the believer that good wide receivers can help bad offensive lines. Stoney, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And I mean, you could even replace Andres Pete with like one of these mid-round tackles. Like, if they somehow luck into Patrick Paul at 38, which it kind of sounds like it would be luck to get him at 38. I'm feeling the same way with Roma Dunze or Malik Nabers or Marvin Harrison Jr. in that third wide receiver spot. Like, that's, you're improving the team. And it's kind of like one of those things where, you know, you have two sides reaching out to help and meet in the middle. It's like the offensive line is a little bit better and the wide receivers are a little bit better as well. You can kind of bridge that gap more than saying like, oh, well, we've just got to improve the offensive line. My brain is turning to mush this week, so I don't know if any of that made sense, but I'm
crossing. Listen, I wrote about Lincoln Riley being the offensive coordinator for the Washington Commanders in my mock draft this morning when I totally meant Cliff Kingsbury. So that's where my mind's at.
Yeah.
Let me add that I think the offensive line is already better because you have Lloyd Cushenberry at center, and I think that's going to be a huge deal. You also have Peter Skoronski heading into year two, and hopefully he doesn't have another appendectomy.
He hung out with Treylon Burks this offseason. Him and Treylon Burks hit up all the Golden Corrals and Ponderosas.
They've been in the big boy lab. I like it.
Yeah, they've been in the big boy lab.
I think Skoronski's going to be better in year two. I think, you know, even our boy Brunskill, your favorite player in the league, I think he's going to be better.
I think you don't like him because he looks like you, and that's what everybody says, that he looks like you. And I think you do not like that.
I'm threatened because he's a younger, like beefier, better version of me. I'm threatened by him. I will admit that. But I also think, look, they also got Bill Callahan instead of Jason Hoteling. Like, the offensive line is already better than it was last year. And yes, they need to get better at tackle. I just think that, like, you can't just say we have to do that first before we do anything else, no matter what. I just don't think that that's where you need to be from a mentality standpoint. Get the best player you can who makes the biggest impact. Yeah, who makes the biggest impact. And I think a star wide receiver makes a bigger, like, if say we were playing the Bengals next week and you told me, all right, you can either say Orlando Brown can't play in this game or Jamar Chase. Who are you choosing? Like, you're getting rid of Jamar Chase, right? Like, you don't give a shit about, you know, they're going to take out Orlando Brown and put in some other slap at left tackle, and maybe we'll sack Joe Burrow a couple extra times. But you take out Jamar Chase and that offense is completely different, right? So that's just where I'm coming from. You don't have to have the best offensive line in the world. You just can't have the worst. And I think the Titans have already moved past that.
to go to more your point, right? Like, even take the Detroit Lions. They paid both Penei Sewell and Amon-Ra St. Brown, who I've been told by people, well, I have been told, you've been told in your replies that you can't pay multiple good players, then so you shouldn't worry about best player available because then you can't pay them,
which is great
because if you just decide to deviate from best player available entirely, you'll never have to pay anybody.
So yeah, you keep drafting bad players. I mean, the Titans don't have anybody to pay. I mean, what a great situation. Okay,
but if you look at the Tennessee, or if you look at the Detroit Lions and you're playing Detroit Lions, aren't you taking away Amon-Ra St. Brown before you take away Penei Sewell? Because then you're left with Khalif Raymond, Jameson Williams, Donovan Peoples-Jones, and Antoine Green. That's not a lot of wide receivers that you have to worry about destroying you.
Yeah.
So I think this is a good way to look at it. Like, go through every team. I think maybe you can make an argument that you'd rather take Trent Williams out because you've seen how Brock Purdy reacts when Trent Williams is gone.
Versus, like,
they played those times and they looked terrible.
Eagles, do you sit Lane Johnson or do you sit AJ Brown? I'm sitting AJ Brown every time, I just think your star level wide receivers make a bigger impact on the game than your star level tackles. And I'm as pro tackle as anybody. I think the offensive line is vital. I just don't think you'd have to have five superstars. I think you can have five good or even like average to slightly above average players and be a pretty good offensive line. Cause I think it's more about like your weakest link than it is about your who is a superstar on that group, you know? So I don't know. That's just where I'm at.
Yeah. I would add a little context in this conversation too, that this is not like last year's receiver class where we're talking about Jaxon Smith-Njigba being the leading candidate to go first among the receivers. This is a draft class that has three really, really good wide receiver prospects in it. And
I think that would still be the three top wide receivers in last year's class.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, you drop any of these guys into last year's class and they're bona fide number one, top five picks. So I think that does kind of factor into this particular discussion as well. It's not like you're passing up a Jaxon Smith-Njigba to draft Joe Alt. Like Adunze Nabors and Harrison Jr. are going to be pretty good pros.
Yeah, I agree. I think so. Let's talk about some draft takes that have really just gotten under your skin that you just you have to put your phone down when it comes across your screen. I think mine right now is this idea, and I kind of alluded to this with my Hal Jordan comp for Brock Bowers, but this idea that because TJ Hockenson hasn't gotten 1,000 yards means that Brock Bowers all of a sudden just sucks. It makes no sense. I'm a historical data kind of guy, and I agree. More often than not, drafting a first round tight end does not make sense. But here's the problem, and I keep telling people this when the Kyle Pitts draft was happening, and everybody called Kyle Pitts a generational talent. I told everybody, you guys are wrong. I'm on the record. We were at Jasper's, and even leading into the draft, everybody is wrong about Kyle Pitts being a generational talent. He cannot go into just any offense and succeed with any quarterback. Does not matter. Brock Bowers has been a generational tight end for three freaking seasons. There have been Titans fans, I mean, that still believe in Brock Bowers, by the way, like Robert Greenlaw. And I believe there's probably even tweets from you from a couple of years ago, Mike, that's like Brock Bowers, no matter what, if he was future Tennessee Titans, Brock Bowers. So I don't understand. Like, I think it's because of Kyle Pitts that everybody is really pissed off or is really down on Brock Bowers. But at the end of the day, Brock Bowers was a better prospect in his first college season than Kyle Pitts was when he was coming out, and they played in the same season, if I'm not mistaken. I may be a little wrong on that, but it's been a long time.
I think that's correct.
And I'm not saying to draft Brock Bowers at 7. What I am saying is that Brock Bowers is a generational tight end. He's a generational prospect. He would be in my top 5 prospects in this class. He's a blue chipper. And he deserves a little bit more respect on his name than just being lumped in with like Noah Fant and David Njoku. Like, those guys did not have the tape that he had. Eric Ebron did not have the tape that Brock Bowers had. Like, people have to understand.
Jason Morrow.
And with John Elway, Peyton Manning, Andrew Luck, it goes Tony Gonzalez to Brock Bowers as far as generational prospects at tight end. Like, this is a true generational prospect. If you're worried about injuries, I'm okay with that. Like, I'm not going to harp on injury concerns or anything like that. But to sit here and just lump them in with, you know, Joe Schmo from Austin, you just lumping them in with Austin Hooper, like, give me a break.
Yeah, I'm with you.
That's my rant.
I couldn't have said it any better myself. I have no notes. 10 out of 10.
Yeah, same here. I am exhausted with the Brock Bowers discourse because it just ignores the fact that we watched this dude be the best player on the best team in the country over the last 3 years since he was 18 years old, which is in playing a position that you're not supposed to be able to do that at. So I just think this is an exception, and I'm okay with that being an exception because there are exceptions. Like, I know we generally need to follow the data. And the data says don't draft a tight end early, but we need to allow that there are exceptions, and I think this is one of them. And I'm okay being on that side of saying, no, he is different because my eyes tell me he is.
Yeah, my only concern with Brock Bowers, and it's a big concern to have, and I'm okay with people having this concern, is injuries.
Yeah,
if you're concerned about production, I don't know what to tell you other than you've missed out on some of the best. You've missed out on some of the best college tape and some of the most fun watching a tight end or any player in the last 3 years. And you probably need to go time travel and tell yourself that, hey, pay attention to this Brock Bowers guy, because everybody who knows anything about college football has been talking about how great he is. And not just at tight end, but one of the best college players during his time, and you need to watch him. Like, this idea that just because TJ Hockenson got 900 something yards and that's his best season, I'm telling you, it may not happen year one, because that there are growing pains for all positions. But I'm telling you that as long as he stays healthy, and that's a big red flag, and I'm willing to acknowledge that, as long as he stays healthy, you're talking about multi-time All-pro tight end, 1,000-yard seasons, all that jazz. You're talking about, you know, he's going to be named up there with all the greats. I mean, you just have to watch the tape. Like, this is where the tape comes in.
And to me, people will constantly say, you know, well, if he's going to be taken in the top 10, he needs to be Travis Kelce. Well, guess what? I think he is Travis Kelce. So I think if you put him in the right situation – with a coach that's willing to use him in the special way that he needs to be used, which is not just like line him up at Y tight end and ask him to block and run, you know, choice routes on third down, but get the ball in his hands, run the screens, run the
reverse. Use him like Travis Kelce.
Yeah, use him the way they you know, target him, make him a feature of the offense. If you put him in that situation, I think he's going to shine, because the run after catch stuff is just so special. And that typically translates.
And again, none of us is advocating for, and I just want to be clear for like this, because this will be the third time I think I've said it. We're not advocating for Brock Bowers at 7. We are talking about general draft topics that we have seen come across our timeline, and it's about Brock Bowers to prospect, not Brock Bowers to the Titans. So that's just where I'm at. Like, Brock Bowers to the Jets is where I think he's going to go right now, and watch Aaron Rodgers just target the crap out of him, because it's a mismatch nightmare. With him, Garrett Wilson, that's a mismatch nightmare for opposing teams. So just throwing that out there, he would be a mismatch nightmare here. But I do think that it would be somewhat of a luxury pick for the Tennessee Titans. But he's probably really high on the draft board, and people need to understand that. Stoney, what's a draft take that has bothered you to no end?
Well, I've got a couple here. One, I posted this question on Twitter last night, and I got some really good responses. My answer was that Jalen Polk is the next Puka Nacua. That was a pretty good one. I watched Jalen Polk's tape, and I'm like, this guy might not even be the next NWI. So I'm not a fan of Jalen Polk myself, but our buddy James Foster chimed in. I had not heard this one. This apparently comes from a former NFL GM, but he says, I watched Drake May's tape and didn't see any big-time throws. That's a good one to me, because I've been a Drake May hater for like a year now, and that is like the only thing that I see that I really like about him are the big time throws off platform and kind of altered angle and off his back foot and all that stuff. Like, there are big time throws all over his tape. So that was a good one to me.
That's a good one. That I saw that one. I was like, whoa, that is insane. I also saw someone that said, like, and I can't remember what article was in it, and maybe I have to Google Keon Coleman and Puka Nacua, because I'm sure there's not many articles about that. But someone said in an article, like, you can't pass, you don't want to pass on Keon Coleman because you're afraid that you're going to end up looking back on it and he's going to be the next Puka Nacua, where he puts up 1,400 yards or something like that. I'm like, whoever said that is someone that is going to get fired. That is someone that is on the short leash in their department.
And I told you the only similarities I see between Keon Coleman and Puka Nacua is that Keon Coleman should also be a fifth round pick.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Mike, what is one that really gets your goat going?
Besides the whatever scout said that he thought Brock Bowers ran 4.8 in Bob McGinn's piece at Go Long, that one was one of my favorites. But I'll say this one. I'm tired of everyone acting like J.C. Latham is not a fucking boss. Like, J.C. Latham, because people get upset about the idea that the Titans might draft him at 7. Look, in any other draft, J.C. Latham is tackle 1.
Listen, they could draft worse players. They could draft like a Corey Davis. Let's be honest.
100%. And look, J.C. Latham to me, the most fun I've had watching any tape for any player this year was watching J.C. Latham just body guys in the SEC play after play after play. And I mean, this is the strongest, this is honest to God, I think the strongest player I think I've ever seen as far as like evaluating from a player coming out of college. Jeffrey Simmons is a monster and like pound for pound, one of the strongest dudes in the NFL, no doubt about it. I think J.C. Latham's a bigger badass than Jeffrey Simmons. Hey, look, that won't be popular among Titans fans, but J.C. Latham, gigantic hands, huge arms, and when he gets his hands on you, you are done. Like, it's over. Rep is over. He is going to throw you to the ground like a rag doll, and he does it with everybody, all sizes. It doesn't matter if it's an outside linebacker or, you know, an inside linebacker or a defensive end or a defensive tackle. If he gets his hands on you, you're done. You're going to the ground. And that dude, I've gotten some pushback about, like, well, he had a lot of penalties and stuff like that. I'll tell you what. I watched a lot of his tape. The penalties that I saw called on him were mostly he has the guy locked up and just decides I'm going to throw you to the ground and gets a holding call because he's like overzealously finishing a guy. To me, look, his feet are good enough that with all that length, because look, if Orlando Brown being the athlete that he is and Trent Brown being the athlete that he is can play left tackle in the NFL as well as they have over the years, then J.C. Latham absolutely can do that. He's got better feet than both those guys and has just as much length and more power. So to me, like, J.C. Latham, one of the best players in this draft, and we need to stop pretending any otherwise. Like, this guy is a mauler and a good pass protector. So I give me all the J.C. Latham stock.
I have to piggyback off this because this is one that's been driving me nuts lately. And it started with Matt Miller, who just weirdly hates J.C. Latham.
He does. He had him like 38.
I don't know if J.C. Latham, you know, gave him a swirly at the combine or brushed him off. I don't know. There has to be some personal reason to have J.C. Latham that low. But because J.C. Latham put in there that he may be better at guard. And then you have Trevor Maddich, who I give no credence to whatsoever, as far as knowing what he's talking about. I'll say it. I don't care. He is the one of the very few people that comes on a radio show that I have never agreed with in my life. and this idea that he's a guard, I do not get this idea that he's a guard. And like you can't draft a guard. I'm like, you're not drafting a guard. You're drafting either a right tackle, or which is just as important as a left tackle, or a guy that you're going to put at left tackle that was recruited to be a left tackle that had certain situations pop up with roster control and roster decisions, not because of talent, but because of what was better for the team and how it was constructed. And the people are like, well, he's going to be a guard. I do not understand that. I can understand Fuaga. I don't really understand Faltanu, but you know, I'm willing to give that one. The Latham does not make sense. Huh?
The Faltanu thing is just heightist. That's all that is. It's just that he's under 6'4", and they're like, well, you know, he can't be a tackle at under 6'4". Like, who gives a shit how tall the guy is? He's got long-ass octopus arms. We're good. He's got longer arms than Joe Walt.
I mean, at Stoney, and it maybe you'll agree, at some point we went from, man, I'm so glad we got Bill Callahan because now we have an offensive line coach and he could do something with it, to, well, you can't draft J.C. Latham because he only plays right tackle and he may be a guard, according to some losers on the internet. He may be a guard. But that's why you have also, and especially penalties, but isn't that why you have Bill Callahan? Like, I'm not saying that Bill Callahan is God. Like, he's not taking Josiah Ezrim and turning him into a left tackle all-pro. But these guys, like Joe Alt, like Olufashanu, like Talisi Fuaga, like Troy Faltanu, like J.C. Latham, who all have their various flaws, that's why you have an offensive line coach.
Yeah, I also think it's funny that there's a lot of people that are like, no, we don't want J.C. Latham. Can't have J.C. Latham. But then if you mention like taking a receiver in the first round, they're like, yeah, I'm okay with it. We can take a tackle later on in the draft, and Bill Callahan's going to turn him into a starter. I'm like, well, what the fuck do you think he's going to do with J.C. fucking Latham? It makes no sense to me.
It's insane. And look, I mean, I think there has been this deification of Joe Alt over the last few months with the Titans fan base, just because it's like, oh, well, there's the best offensive or the best tackle prospect. We have a need at tackle. Boom, this guy must be the best. And I think, like, he has flaws to his game, right? I don't think he's perfect. He's very good. He's still my tackle one. We've talked about this multiple times, but I just keep coming back to, like, it's not that far apart. And to me, like, you could also make an argument that, like, yeah, you have Bill Callahan. Why would you want to go take the most technically refined guy that's already there from a technical standpoint that maybe Callahan doesn't have a lot to tell him because, he's already doing it the way it should be done. Why wouldn't you want to take the guy that's got wild physical traits and J.C. Latham or even Olu Fashanu and have them fix the technique stuff that maybe they're not doing right and then get through that ceiling and find that other level that I don't think Alt necessarily has compared to those guys. So I don't know. There's some of that tackle discourse stuff very confusing to me. I would love Alt. I would love Fashanu. I would love Latham. Like, all those guys I think are awesome players, and I would be perfectly happy with them. Even if they took them at 7, I'm not going to be mad at any of that. So I think there's just been – some of that's been lost in the sauce out there on Twitter a little bit.
Yeah, it's like nobody can just stay in the middle. It has to be one or the other.
Yeah, he's a bum. You know, he's got to be a bum because he's not my favorite guy.
To me, this all ties into, and we're going to close it out with one bold prediction from each of us. But this all kind of ties into what I said on Monday, what I put out on Twitter last night, is like there's not a lot that the Titans can do at 7 that can make me mad. There's not a lot that they can do throughout this entire draft that can, on day 1 and day 2, that can make me mad. But there is stuff that would make me be like, okay, well, hopefully the right questions are asked at the press conference. Like, let's say that Alton Neighbors are on the board and they go Dallas Turner. Like, what makes Dallas Turner the better player than those two? Like, what traits and what was the fit? What was the decision process? Like, tell us about the process that led you to Dallas Turner over considered one of the best wide receivers and a left tackle, you know. There are choices like that, you know, outside of like drafting a safety at 7, a cornerback at 7, out of the realistic possibilities at 7, there's a lot where you could just kind of, and I know the people don't do this, you take a step back and you say, I understand, I don't agree, but I do understand. That's kind of where I'm at with this draft, is like, if it's Alt, it's fine. If it's Neighbors, it's fine. If it's Odunze, it's fine. If it's Marvin Harrison Jr., it's fine. If it's Olu Fashanu because Alt is gone and they like Olu Fashanu, I see the vision. If it's J.C. Latham in that same situation, I see the vision. If they like Olu Fashanu better than Joe Alt, I still understand it. I have not this is the first time in a long time that I feel like I haven't pigeonholed myself, because really, Kevin Garnett's right. Anything is possible.
What about Byron Murphy?
I said that I could see it. I would definitely not agree with it, but if you put him next to Jeffrey Simmons, that's pretty tough for offenses to have to worry about. Like, it's not my choice. And again, I would have questions about the process and how they arrived to that. But I do understand that when you're talking about a defensive line in the first round, that's where you get your defensive lineman. And they normally get a second contract. And when you put him next to Jeffrey Simmons and you have him for 4 or 5 years, you're doing the opposite of what you did with Jarrell Casey, which was waste all of Jarrell Casey's prime by never doing that. So that's just kind of how I feel. So what is your bold prediction, Stoney?
Just for the Titans or for the entirety of the first round?
You can do one of each or just the Titans, whichever one.
If I'm going just the Titans, I think it's going to be stick and pick wide receiver. Is that bold? I mean, it feels like we've kind of.
I think it bucks the general consensus, right? I mean, the general consensus is Alt, 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 Alt. I mean, that's what it is. Yeah. So if that's, sure. I think if that's against the grain, it may not be bold to us, But I do think that it is bold in that it goes against the consensus.
Yeah, because I kind of feel like I talked to you a little bit yesterday. I just, the gut feeling says that Ault and or Latham, or one of those two are going to be gone. And one of these wide receivers, maybe even Marvin Harrison Jr., falls to seven and they just can't pass him up. And it's not worth, they're not getting the offer, the compensation they look for to trade back. So I don't know, gut feeling right now over 24 hours out is that they end up sticking and picking a wide receiver.
Mike, what's your bold prediction?
My bold prediction is going to be that Ault is not the first tackle off the board. I think it's going to be Latham at the Chargers at five. I'll call my shot specifically on that. But I think Latham goes to the Chargers at five if they don't trade back. That is my bold prediction.
Here's my bold prediction and a preview into my mock draft over at PaulKarski.com. The Rams trade up with the Titans in round two. So they could take Bo Nix and the Titans get their 2024 second round pick and both of their 2024 third round picks in this year's draft, because they still have seven picks after that, the Rams do. So they're going to get that haul from the Rams for Bo Nix. It's like a reverse Will Levis.
I like it. I like it.
That's a bold prediction.
I like that one.
All right. That will do it for us. This has been Football and Other F Words. Bluegrass Beverages, our sponsor. Go to bluegrassbeverages.com. Join up with their little newsletter. Get you some tickets. We only have a few tickets left to our draft party on Thursday and Friday. And then, of course, and I just found out that Easton and JT, the boys from Hot Read, will be joining their papas on Saturday for the day three draft show. Me and Stoney, Easton, and JT will all be on the draft show. It won't be chaotic in the slightest. I'm sure it'll go off smoothly. Mm-hmm. And there won't be a lot of talking over each other or anything like that. But that's what's going to happen on day three. It'll be fun. And so we got day one, day two, day three of the draft. And this has been Football and Other F Words. And you have just been effed.